Hey guys, it's Joelle Smith. I'm back at the New York Film Academy Hour, and I'm really excited because usually we talk to you guys about films and storytelling and crafting, and we're going to touch on that today, but we're also going to talk about what do you do with your film after it's done, once it's in the can, where does it go? Cricket Rumley joins us to tell us all about film festivals, how to get in, how to make your film more appealing, and what you can do during production to be ready for the festival. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews.
Hey guys, that sound is the lovely tones of Moana, which I'm actually really excited to kick it. If you follow us on our Instagram LA page, you'll soon see a Throwback Thursday when we had one of the creators of Moana come in and talk to our students, which was like a way cool day. This is one of my favorite songs from the film. You just gave a final on Moana.
Yes, I did.
Best class ever?
Oh, yes. And the students thanked me afterwards. They were like, I love that movie so much. Thanks for making me watch it twice and do an exam on it. One of them sent me a thank you email.
Yes.
About life lessons learned from Moana. I was so touched, Joelle.
That is the sweetest thing I've ever heard. Oh, my gosh. I'm Joelle Smith, your host. I'm happy to be back in the seat. This is Cricket Rumley.
Hi, guys.
Cricket, can you please remind me of your official title at school?
My official title is Film Festivals Liaison and Advisor, and I am also a full-time screenwriting instructor at the school.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so I want to start right at the top by asking you the same question we always ask our first-time guests,
which
is, when did you know that you were in love with movies?
Oh, this is a crazy story.
I love crazy stories.
This is actually a crazy story. So I grew up in an era and a place where we didn't go to movies a lot.
Oh.
And I saw this movie as a kid, Romancing the Stone.
Yes! So good.
Yes. So the reason that I am sitting before you today, Joelle, is because of Romancing the Stone, starring Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. So I saw that movie as a kid. My sister and I loved it so much. We were like, romance, action, adventure, Danny DeVito. What can go wrong?
It's
alligators. And I wanted to be a journalist, so I thought I wanted to be an international journalist in Latin America. I did my junior year abroad in Bogota, Colombia.
You really took this movie to heart.
I went to Bogota, Colombia, because Joan Wilder in Romancing the Stone went to not to Bogota, she went to Cartagena. Yes, I went to Colombia because of a movie.
That is amazing, and also I know you're not the only person to do that.
I know I'm not the only person. But that year, it was so fascinating. It was really cheap to go to the movies, and at that time, I don't think it's like this now, but at that time, whatever was in local theaters was about 6 to 8 months behind the U.S., and it was like a dollar a movie.
I love that price.
Right?
Yes.
And it also was the Museum of Modern Art in Bogota had amazing series. So I got to see all these amazing films like Apocalypse Now and Clockwork Orange. And I remember seeing Hair in screened in 35mm at this museum in Colombia. And then I also realized I would be a terrible journalist because I don't really like facts.
Cricket, yes! I understand entirely.
Joelle is a journalist, guys. I am a writer. I like emotions.
But I'm a pop culture journalist, so I like semi-facts.
I was like, I can't do facts. I like the way people feel in conflict and argument and escalation. So I knew I could not go to J school. I had to go to film school.
Okay, so what, go to Columbia and you start studying to become a journalist.
Yes, and I did an internship with a CNN affiliate. And
wow.
And it was really cool. So I was just like, get me to a film school,
please. You get pretty far, but you're like, screw these facts. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to tell stories.
I'm done with flat facts. Flat facts.
All of it. Just
all
throw
of
it in the trash can. So film school, is it immediately screenwriting? Are you thinking of becoming a director? How do you choose a concentration?
Well, The crazy thing is that I got into Columbia University after Columbia. I went to Columbia. And they didn't require you to do that.
Oh.
Not the first year. Everybody started out in the same courses, the same assignments, everything. And then you got to choose, I believe, at the end of your first year. And by then, I had been on set enough that I was like, ugh, I don't like facts, and I don't like directing. So I'm a writer. I'm a screenwriter.
I always liked screenwriting and pre-production because I say nothing can go wrong. We're just spitting out ideas. If you don't like it, we can change it. It's so inexpensive. Yep. I don't have to worry about giant numbers. There's not people waiting on me to make a decision. All of that, as a high anxiety person, it's much nicer to just be sitting alone in a room typing out your story.
I know. Or sitting around the table with your actor friends reading the script and working with producers and all that stuff.
Definitely. Which can be fun and exciting. I don't want to discourage you. But if you have a high level of anxiety, it just might not work for you. You know what I mean? And that's totally okay. So Romancing the Stone, things that stand out to me about that film is, like, super strong female protagonist. I remember watching with my dad and being like, oh, this is, like, a whole person. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And a romance, which at that point in time...
Romance!
I was only experiencing in Shakespeare. Like, these kind of fully-fledged women who were still able to have these romantic entanglements and relationships. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, what is her name? She does all of the Meryl Streep-style, like, rich white lady movies. I can't think of
writer?
Her name. Yeah, she's writer-director. Oh, man. Why can't I think of her name?
Can you give a movie? I heard Meryl Streep type.
It's complicated.
Nancy Myers. Shire Myers.
Stephanie Myers, and I'm like, she definitely wrote the Twilight books. So, yes, Nancy Myers. Yes. Those were kind of the places where I was able to discover these things.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. It doesn't surprise me that Romancing the Stone is a movie that had a powerful effect on you, knowing you as I do. what kind of stories were you interested in telling right away?
I wanted to tell stories about transcending borders and boundaries. Mm-hmm. That was incredibly important to me. And now looking back on Joan Wilder and the character that she plays in Romancing the Stone, it's like, of course, that was appealing to me. Of course, travel, but travel doesn't have to be getting on a plane and going somewhere. Travel can be going into a new phase of your life or a new job or a new situation. It's challenging yourself in different ways. And I felt very strongly that I wanted to tell stories about that were more about women breaking out of those boundaries, which is why I chose Moana for the opening music, y'all. Yep, that right there. And something else that's really is interesting about Romancing the Stone in particular is that it also started and ended in New York City, and I desperately wanted to move to New York City. I mean, I was like, that is where my life is going to go. I was like 13, 14 years old in Mobile, Alabama, and I was like, I am moving to New York City.
So I grew like my backyard was cornfields, as I like to say. And at the same time, I was like, big lights, big city. At that age, I was all about Broadway, but by the time I reached my senior year of high school, my drama teacher was like, look, I think you're a director. And not an actress. Like, no, she pulled me aside. Her sister's a casting director. They were like, look, we want you to focus on directing. Like, you need to be telling stories. You're always bossing people around. Like, channel that energy.
Oh, my God.
So that's how I wound up making films. They call me Mama Bear. Like, I'll put it that way.
I'm totally bossy. To this day.
That's how we get things done. I embrace my bossiness. You know, it's cool. You know, we're both very nice people.
Yep.
We just have an idea of how things should be done. And we're not afraid to express it.
We are not. Every time I hear the word bossy, I think of that Beyonce quote where somebody was like, you're bossy. And she said, I'm the boss. Yes.
It's like Lauren Conrad.
Note to everybody. She's the boss.
Someone asked Lauren Conrad during a radio interview. She's CEO of a fashion company.
Uh-huh.
They're like, oh, what's your favorite position? She was like, CEO. Just without missing a beat, she was like, come at me, bro.
Was that supposed to be some, like, weird sexual thing?
Yes, definitely. Because this is how women in the business are often treated.
Shut down.
Yeah, no, hardcore.
Shut down.
She became a little bit my hero in that moment. I was like, wow, without flinching.
You would have guessed. What was she on? It wasn't the Hills. OC, it was The Hills.
Yes, ma'am. Yes. Now she's got her own fashion company. She's married to a football player. She's doing good in life.
And she's a CEO.
She is. Mm-hmm. Put respect on her name.
Yep.
You watch Romancing the Stone. You're telling stories of women breaking barriers. Mm-hmm. That's interesting to me. Say, you know, travel and breaking barriers is important to you because that's kind of what I see you doing now with festivals and things. I know your first festival was Telluride, right?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Telluride. How is that your first festival? I can't even tell you how jealous I am that your introduction to the festival world was Telluride.
I know. And to be honest, spoiled. I am spoiled. I'm like, spoiled. Okay, so the first thing is that when I started out in film school, it was a different world. There were dinosaurs roaming the planet.
Get out of here, Cricket. No.
There were not. You guys, I'm not 1,000 years old. but it was the early 90s, and it was just a different landscape. Sure. And so I say this because I think I see a lot of young filmmakers trying to apply to film festivals, and they're like, there are 5,000. I'm like, dude, I know. Like, I feel you. That is some serious numberage right there. But how I got involved with Telluride is through the chair of the Columbia Film Division at the time, Annette Ensdorf, who is still an instructor there, a professor there. And she is the moderator for all the panels, ooh, all the panel discussions. And
what a sweet gig.
It's a sweet gig. And I don't know if you know what Telluride is like, but it's really, they are so badass. Am I allowed to say badass?
You can say
that. I said badass. Which camera are we on? The top one or the low one? I want to say badass. Badass. Yep. They do not release their slate of films until the day the festival starts.
What a scramble.
I want you to sit and think about this for a moment.
Because we plan our, like, I go with a bunch of people to different, you know, festivals, usually 2 or 3 times a year. And I know, like, let's take mm-hmm. one that's coming up. South by Southwest is slowly starting to ink out their names.
Yes, I saw that.
Slowly PR people who are ready to promote their movie start slinking out to journalists like, hey, maybe come check out this movie. And you slowly start building a calendar. And eventually that calendar becomes nuts because you're like, well, there's a chance I don't get into this movie so I can run across the street to see this movie in 15 minutes. And you have to have that calendar because it's life or death. A lot of times they won't rescreen a film, so you maybe have 1 or 2 chances to see it. So, okay, walk me through the process of day of making this calendar.
So, you guys, the rest of this show is going to be about me explaining this. and telling you how awesome it is. So, here's the thing. So, Telluride, you have to understand the location. It is in a box canyon, like 2-3 hours from the nearest international airport. Oh. It is, like, far off the beaten path. Telluride does have its own airport, but I'm pretty sure it can't be international. It's tiny. It's tiny. I can't remember what was the first year they did it, but they're in their 40s.
Okay.
And it was just a bunch of friends and this married couple, Bill and Stella Pence, who were out of Dartmouth University in New Hampshire, had bought this amazing opera house that served the mining community of Telluride, like in the late 1800s and the 1900s.
What? This is amazing.
I know, this is like the craziest story. And I apologize to any Telluridians watching this for any details that I get wrong. But remember, I don't like facts. I like emotion and I like heart.
Yes.
90% of what I'm going to say is true. So they bought this opera house. And at that point, Telluride, I mean, it must have been the late 60s, early 70s, and it was a dying town. It was not a ski village. It was just like, you know, you're from the Midwest. Like,
it's an old mining town.
Yeah, people just like leave to go to the big city for economic purposes. So Bill and Stella bought the opera house. It is still there today. It is the sort of, it is the starting point of the Telluride Film Festival. And there, the festival has this logo that says show, and it looks like a medallion. Well, that show medallion was, and still is, the light and the sign on the Opera House. And any night there was a show, the light, it would be lit up so that on the mountainsides around in all these little communities, people could see.
Wow.
And come down.
Okay. Wow. Wow. So, okay. You don't know this about me yet, but I'm like obsessed with Western culture, like Manifest Destiny, awful and destructive as it can be. It's such a fascinating belief system. And then watching especially how women and minorities were able to help build these towns up and like establish homes and things, like it to me, it's what the great Westerns are missing, are those angles. So this is all very like incredibly fascinating. Is the Opera House serve as their like main showcase theater? Is that like where all the big screenings are?
Well, so here's the deal. The Opera House is tiny, and it was not designed as a movie theater. And so it's where the big honorary, like, not memorials, but the big, they do tributes every year to certain, and that's where the first one is.
Wow.
And I say all this to say that, like, Telluride is one of the oldest film festivals in the world, but it also has one of the most, I think, unique histories in that and where it's set up. And so Bill and Stella were like, we're just going to program some films. Tom Letty was involved with this and out of the West Coast. And they just started it as a cinephiles festival. So this would have been 70s, I believe. Yeah.
Wow.
And their thing was, we're just not going to announce it. So they built up a community of fans who were cinephiles, and because it's what I like to call a destination film festival, and you just have to go and trust.
I love the model of build it and they will come.
It's field
incredible.
Of dreams.
Yeah, totally.
Telluride Film Festival style.
Fascinating.
Y'all.
Okay, so what's your first job at Telluride?
So the first year that I went, it was actually as a student. Now there is a very, very amazing student program at Telluride. This festival is generally 4 to 5 days long. It's over Labor Day weekend, and it's
a short festival.
It's short.
Wow!
But
Telluride is so unique.
Packed. Absolutely, it is. It's super short, jam packed. They transform these other spaces into theaters.
Is it like Sundance, where like it's high schools and random people's houses?
Exactly.
Okay.
Note to everyone, word on the street is that Robert Redford tried to buy Sundance. I mean, buy Telluride.
Whoa.
Before he started Sundance in Park City. I heard that rumor.
I like this rumor.
Must be true.
Again, back to facts.
Yes,
it's a good story.
Yes, it's a good story. I know Joelle's never going to invite me back again.
I will invite you back so fast.
So full of all sorts of ridiculousness. Yeah, so they have to essentially like transform multiple spaces into movie theaters. So they need a lot of labor. And the first year that I went, it was through the student program, and I just saw films for free. And they still do this.
Greatest life.
You have to apply. There's a very rigorous application process. You have to be either an undergrad or graduate student and get recommendations and everything. So I went to Telluride the first year with this program. And I wish I could remember who was there exactly. I've been like 10 times since that first time, and it all like blurs together.
I understand.
And often the things that end up at possibly were premiered at Cannes get their North American premiere at Telluride and then go to Toronto, which is a couple of weeks after Telluride in September, or they go to the New York Film Festival. Mm-hmm. So after that first year as a student, I applied to go back as an intern, which in Telluride they call dogs, the dogs. And for about 7 years in a row, I would go out there for about 6 to 8 weeks, live there, and help build theaters, I was on the production team.
That's incredible.
It was an amazing experience.
So I'm also a huge advocate for students taking part in these student-related programs,
yes,
to festivals, because that's how I got my start in festivals. My first festival was...
Cool.
Well, technically, my first festival was Chicago International Film Festival. Mm-hmm. They had a partnership with the school I went to. So I was there, you know, passing out the flyers and stuff, seeing a couple of things. But it felt like I worked at the movie theater where parts of the Chicago Internet, it felt more like just being at work than a festival. Right. It was hard to get swept up into all the emotions. So after that, I went to Cannes. With their student program, with the American Pavilion.
Wow.
Yeah. I cannot recommend it enough. It was like 2 weeks. You'd work like 4 to 6 hours a day at the pavilion. So, like, I was working coffee. It just, the English taught me how to make an actual cup of tea. They were like, Americans, come here. This is not how you do it. So I learned, and it was fun. But then after that, it was just go watch movies all day, every day. Yeah. And then on top of that, you're with your contemporaries, your peers, all day, all night. So I booked. I was roomed with three girls who I'm still, like, really good friends with today. And we would just go see movies every day. Like, great movies, terrible movies, movies I did not understand. Mm-hmm. But getting to consume all of that is such an important factor. Obviously, you're an advocate for Telluride. Mm-hmm. Are there other programs our students should be looking at like this? Are there other, like, really good, reputable ones with film festivals that you point to and say, you know, try applying there?
Well, Telluride is definitely amazing. And I think that different festivals do things differently with students. Our students are in sort of a challenging situation because we run three semesters a year. Mm. And so it's hard to align festival attendance with class attendance. So that's a little bit of a tricky thing. But South by Southwest has some student programs. I would say that that's a really good one to look at. And we have some alliances here in LA with a couple of things where we can get students free tickets.
Yeah.
And we're starting to explore more volunteer opportunities and more educational opportunities. But yeah, I think it's an amazing thing.
It's mm-hmm. definitely amazing. And I think it was vital to my understanding of what it was not only what I was up against competition wise as I was applying, but it gave me a full understanding of, like, oh, I can literally make any kind of film. It just needs to be at about this quality level, and it needs to be my distinct voice, which is what I walked away from. Because you see a lot of stuff you're gonna like, stuff you're not gonna like, but what you notice about all of it is, like, it's well constructed and it comes from a very informed place. Like, it's very much that person's vision. No one else could have made that movie. And I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like that's what festivals are really looking for, something that is distinctly you.
Yes. So this is a question that people talk about a lot. Like, what kind of movie should I make? And I'm like, one that you want to spend a couple of years on, buddy. Mm. So the good news about there being over 5,000 festivals is that there's definitely a festival for your film. Like, once you have created a work that works on whatever level, then it, why not get it out there into the world? Everybody wants to go to Sundance. That is something that I hear all the time. It's like, I really want to get into Sundance. Well, Sundance accepts less than 1% of the submissions of short films. So everybody's chances are very, very, very,
itty bitty.
Very itty bitty, 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 bitty. However, and this is really interesting, I think that there are ways to target, to strategize, and get your work out there to festivals and build them that are maybe not the tier one, like the Sundance, the Cannes, the Tribeca, et cetera. Maybe not tier one, but help get you to tier one.
Yeah.
So if you've made a genre film, then why not submit to all the horror and sci-fi? So if you're making that kind of film, great. But there's a lot that's out there.
I see. That's a really interesting approach, especially because you're targeting your film then to its central audience. Like, people that are diehard sci-fi fans are going to be going to these festivals. They'll have eyes on you. They'll get to know you as a filmmaker, which I guess kind of brings us to, how important is it to attend the film festivals that you're accepted into? And if you're going to attend, what items or promotional materials or people should you bring to the festival to help promote your film?
Attend, bring $1 million, and your best friend. Okay, half of that, two-thirds of that is bad advice. Okay, so here's something that happens pretty regularly. Okay. I meet with students. I get an email from a student who says, I'm so excited. I just finished my thesis film, and I really want to send it to festivals. And can I meet with you? And I have this wonderful questionnaire. I ask all sorts of questions. And then I watch the film and start to try to get an idea of where could this go based on all sorts of things, Joelle. Like, where is the director from? Uh-huh. Where do they want to go in the world? Where do they have friends that they could stay with if they got into a festival? All that sort of stuff. And I have this conversation. Is the director a veteran? Is the director a woman? Is the director of color? Is the director gay, LGBTQ? Like, I try to figure out, like, who is this person? Not only what is the film, but who is the person who made the film? And then try to strategize. Is this person Indian or Brazilian or, you know, because in LA, we have the LA Indian Film Festival. We have the LA Brazilian Film Festival. There are so many.
Italian cinema style is coming up very soon.
Yep. We have a great relationship with those guys. Like, there's just a lot. And so that's why when people say to me, I really just want to get into Sundance, I say, let's take a step back and look at like what all the opportunities are.
Which is, again, not to say that your film isn't of Sundance quality, but even the guy that won the animated portion of Sundance this year, I think his film already had distribution, was already a company was looking
That's
at.
Interesting.
Like, he was so far like ahead of where I thought someone entering a festival should be, which I think just speaks to the high caliber of competition that you're entering in. And, you know, if you're going against, it helps to have those laurels behind you, certainly.
Oh my gosh, it so does. Okay, so wait, I still want to answer your question about what to take. We're going to come back to that. You guys, this is what to take. I'm going to put it right there so I can't get it, so we'll get to it. Let's talk about Sundance, to be honest.
Okay.
All right, so you know what premiere status is.
Yes.
I am going to explain it to your viewers.
Please do.
For those of you watching at home, it means that your film premieres at a certain festival. And so they have world premiere status, which means that a festival requires that the film premiere for the first time in public at this festival. I'm talking to you, Cannes Film Festival.
Yep.
I'm talking to you, baby. and then you have, you know, like North American.
That's
you might
TIFF.
Have American. You might have Canadian. You might have European. You might get down to the state level, like, or L.A. Like, this must be an L.A. premiere.
Copy.
So there are so many different levels of premiere status, and anybody who's applying to film festivals needs to read the fine print to find out what the festival is requiring.
Oh, no, you got to put your producer hat on.
You've
got all that fine reading.
You know.
Oh, Lord. I'm exhausted thinking about it.
For somebody who said she hates facts, I spend a lot of time dealing with legal documents. And I always highlight them and write special notes so I don't forget.
It's important.
So, but the thing is that Sundance, for short films, does not require premiere status.
Interesting.
For features, yes. For features, yes, y'all. But for short films, they don't require that. And there's this great book called How Not to Write a Short Film. And I'm so embarrassed I can't remember the author's name right now. I apologize, author of that great book. She was a Sundance Shorts programmer. And so she took her experience and turned it into a book about how not to write a short film.
How have I never heard about this book?
I know, right?
I need to get this.
Well, part of it, at least the version that I saw, was from like 2008-ish.
Okay.
And so there are technology elements that no longer apply at all. Like, nobody's mailing DVDs. Thank you, Film Freeway and Without a Box. Yeah, so there are things that aren't as applicable, but so much of it is. And she makes the point that Sundance doesn't feel like short films. They should require a world premiere for short films because the life of a short film is very limited, unlike a feature. And that's changed a little bit with the rise of, you know, online.
Digital streaming content. Yeah, absolutely.
It has changed. So it's not exactly the way it was back then. But Sundance doesn't require world premiere.
Interesting.
So what that means, it doesn't even require North American premiere. So what that means is that you can work on getting your film into other festivals. And then what happens is that programmers talk to each other. They look at what each other are programming. They go to each other's festivals. And so you can actually build a word of mouth around your film.
Wow.
And then even, no lie, get invited to a festival as opposed to having to submit. Yes.
That's like my dream is like in your inbox, like, hey, we just want to, like, no headache.
I know.
You're accepted already. Just send us these materials back. Like, what?
Right? Yep.
Sensational.
Yeah. And, you know, to the extent that sometimes programmers at one festival will judge another.
It's an incestuous community. Everybody knows everybody.
It's a small community. Yeah. And so you could, so last year, 2017 Palm Springs Shorts Fest, which y'all is coming up in June. Submissions are open. Get on that. That's an amazing Oscar qualifying film festival. You heard it now. It is in June in the desert and it's hot out there. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to take it.
Dressing appropriately is also like festival guideline 101. Like South by Southwest, where theaters can be like 5 miles apart. Like, it's hot.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Even though it's early spring, it's still like ungodly.
It's March. I know.
So much.
And I have a girlfriend who went to Cannes one year and she was like, I have to wear heels everywhere, but I'm going to go get dancer's shoes because they're stronger.
Well, and you're on the plaza there, so it's all old cobbled brick streets. And then they're like, you have to dress to the nines. You're like, it is noon on a Thursday, bro. I'm just trying to see a movie. I don't want to be in full ball gown. This is so much.
I can tell you I have already broken my ankle just thinking about walking on that in high heels.
Yeah, so I just stayed at the Lumiere Theater because they were like, just like down this alley and three doors down. No, it's fine. If it's not here, I'll catch it later. So let's talk about things you should bring once you're accepted.
Yes, once you are accepted. Okay, so first of all, bring a good attitude. I know I sound like a kindergarten teacher. I know I do.
It's not something I would have thought to pack.
I know. You already have yours, naturally. You just carry yours around with you. Me, I have to go buy it at, like, 99 cent store and take it along. So let's talk about the practical and let's talk about the sort of, you know, metaphorical. I do think that going to film festivals is important for a couple of reasons. More often than not, what I hear young filmmakers want is a job from someone.
Mm.
So what you should bring to the festival is the understanding that that's not the right thing to look for. You may end up getting a job out of this. Of course you want a job. We all want a job. But what you really want is the experience of having people, total strangers, watch your film, react to it, and respond to it. Because yes, you want a job, but you are also an artist. And chances are that you have been developing this project with a pretty limited team of people. And by that, I mean, like, if you're a student, there will be maybe a dozen instructors and maybe 30 people in your class or and around that, like, and then your crew and everything. And anyone who has seen the film and given you feedback on a cut is probably someone who loves you. So, I mean, I hope they love you. I hope they do. So when you go to festivals, this is your opportunity to interact with the public. And that's ultimately, that's the big goal.
Yeah.
Not an Oscar. I know everybody wants an Oscar. I do too. I'm still looking for mine. But what we really want is to have an impact with our work.
Yeah.
So going to festivals and say, and being open for those conversations, being, if your film is programmed, chances are you're going to end up on some sort of Q&A session. People will be asking you questions, total strangers.
I can't tell you guys how important it is to panel if you get an opportunity.
Yes.
I am not currently making films, but I am hosting in the public a lot. And every time I panel, like, the connections built from the people on the panel, from the people watching the panel, it's incredibly impactful to your career. Like, literally, no matter what it is. If someone asks you to do a panel at any kind of sized event, you should take the opportunity and do it.
So I went to a transportation conference recently. Okay, so you guys.
I almost fell asleep. What? A transportation conference. I know.
She's like, now we're talking about transportation. Awesome. That's my obsession currently, besides film festivals. I'm very obsessed with transportation, public transportation, and the future in particular, as we see Los Angeles growing and committing to more of that.
Which is insane.
It's so crazy. And actually, one of the projects that I'm working on is a non-narrative sort of experimental doc on utilizing footage that I've taken over the last 2 years.
When that is completed, I want you to come back here and talk to us about it. That sounds fascinating.
I'm so excited. I mean, I didn't really, like, I did not mean to bring that up, but it gets to the issue of paneling, because I got up and asked a question of a really top-notch panel of, you know, government officials, Silicon Valley venture capitalists, and they all did this thing of like, boom. And I was able to go back in to talk my way into the green room afterwards. Ooh. And got all those people's business cards and set up meetings with them. And so, yeah, and that's I think another thing. Even if you don't have a film in a panel, and you are deeply interested in a film or a filmmaker, and they are on a panel, get up in front of that panel and ask your burning questions.
There's always going to be a hesitation lull. Like, don't be afraid to be that first person.
That's exactly what Matt Conan says, who's another filmmaking instructor.
I might have stolen that from Matt Conan. I'm not even going to lie.
I don't know.
It's a universal truth. So how can you steal a universal truth? I'm just passing on his tasty morsels, which is like, first of all, they're going to remember you. Like, you were the first person, especially if they're younger or newer filmmakers. I met the filmmaker of Beasts of No Nation. Which I think was like his second large, you know, big picture. Yep. But still, like, he was still at that stage where he was just like, people were like, oh, he watched my movie?
Right. I know. That's exciting.
It is exciting.
That's so exciting. And yeah, so I think that, you know, back to the question of what should you take to a film festival, it's like, take this desire to learn about yourself and your work in public. I think that's critical. And then I do think some people are great at going to festivals by themselves. Some people want a friend. It is work. There are a lot of parties at a lot of these festivals.
Which you think sounds fun, but I'm telling you, like, it's you're always in work mode.
It's work mode. It's exhausting. I just saw when I went to the Cinema Italian Style Festival. We went to that together.
Yeah, we sure did.
Yeah.
It was a good time.
That was a good time.
It was my first Michelin star meal. I was really excited about it.
There was food after the screening. But I remember watching that filmmaker. He did not sit down once to eat at that dinner. He walked from table to table because his film was Italy's submission for the Oscars. And he went from table to table. So yes, that's that. There's a lot of conversation about press kits, electronic press kits.
Yes.
Yes. Now, I think that there is a difference between having a short film and a feature film. If you're doing a feature film, you definitely need the more traditional version of the press kit with everybody's bios and contact information, because you may be trying to get distribution for your feature film, especially at something like Sundance. Or Sundance is a big one. Cannes is a big one. Those are the ones where people are going to these festivals because it's also partially a market. But for short films, I think you can go with something much more streamlined, a press kit with writer, director, producer bios, actor bios, full credits, maybe a director's mission statement or a mission statement, that sort of thing. But what I think is really important, and this is going to sound old school and kind of cheesy, go with a postcard.
Those were so helpful.
Right?
I can't even. So, like, when I went, we did like, a movie poster. Mm-hmm. We went wide instead of long, though. Okay. It was a close-up of my actress's eyes. All of the, like, details of the cast and crew below. Yes. And then on the back, just where you can find us, what school I was a part of, and where. A brief detail of, like, where I was going to be at the festival. So if you want to find me, I am around. And I can't tell you, like, the film didn't wind up getting picked up or bought, but just, it was a great stepping stone to get into a lot of conversations.
Yeah.
I was in the short film corner at Cannes, so... that is where people can just upload your movie onto a film, onto a computer screen, essentially, and watch it.
And watch it right there.
And so it's great to be like, just go and watch, just go and watch, just go and watch. They're incredibly helpful.
They're incredibly helpful. Yeah. Well, it's like a business card. And so, yeah, so on one side, it's like essentially the poster for your film, only in postcard size.
Yes.
And then on the back, did you have special postcards printed for each film? Or each festival that you went to, or did you leave it blank?
Yeah, no, for each festival. We went to 4, I think. We did Sao Paulo, Cannes, Chicago, and then a smaller one in Illinois. So each one had its own.
Because, which is great. And you can also print that one side completely white and then run, you know those stickers that you can put, the labels that you can put through a printer?
Oh, just stick them
Then you just do a different one for each festival.
That will save you so much in printing. That is so smart.
Right? So you don't, so you can just, and you, that lets you be more flexible with what you're putting on there. And I think that's a really good one.
That's so a good smart. Hint. You have talked about, oh no, this is Kim's story. Kim Ogletree was here a couple of episodes ago, but she spoke about.
We look exactly alike, y'all. Exactly.
They look nothing alike.
I'm kidding.
Kim remembers specific films based off of the merch they brought. So, like, there's one film she remembers where the girl brought fortune cookies and handed them out. And you could snap open the fortune cookie. There was additional information about the film inside of the fortune cookie, which she thought was crazy and has stuck with her for years. There was another film where they brought a live pig to the film festival to promote the movie.
That's
and it's just
so crazy.
Like, maybe you
I
don't have
that.
To bring farm animals, but trying to be creative in what you bring to express about your film just to help you stick out. Because, again, as you say, there are not just the 5,000 film festivals, but at each film festival, there can be multiple layers of it and multiple movies. It can be hard to stick out.
Yeah. It really can. And, you know, that does bring up a couple of questions that I have. And one is, like, finances. I think that something that people sometimes do. It is heartbreaking to me when a filmmaker writes me and says, Cricket, I want to go to film festivals, but I have no money. I spent it all on my film. And all I can apply to is free film festivals. And I just kind of shudder. I am sure that there are some amazing free film festivals out there. I hope I'm not offending anyone. But really, we all need to just remember that we want an audience for our films. And yes, you can get one on YouTube, but then you have to market it like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get eyes on things. I mean, Joelle's in social media. You know how hard it is
very
to get eyes on anything these days. And so, festivals are still just a great way to do that.
So how much money, so let's say a short, like a typical student short, let's say you spend $2,000 on your short. What should your budget roughly be for festivals?
Okay, so I don't have an exact answer for you, but I'm going to put it to you this way. Every festival has various deadlines.
Mm.
They usually have an early bird deadline, a regular deadline, and a late deadline. And each of those deadlines has a different fee for submission. So if you do early bird, it may be $25. If you do regular, it may be $50. If you do late, it may be $75. So your objective is to hit early bird deadlines.
Copy.
And so if you've got $500, no, let's say you have $750.
Okay,
I'm going to make this easy for me. I don't like facts and I don't like math either, my friends.
We're artists, damn it.
Oh, I know. Everybody's going to be like, what do you do? $750. That's 10 submissions if you're hitting late.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you're hitting early, it's 30 submissions.
Copy that.
Okay, so that's one of the things that you want to do. Now, I was talking to Gabriella in Alumni Affairs yesterday, and she told me, and I totally agree with this, you really want to submit late in the early bird deadline if you can, so you get that early bird price. But if you go too early, the programmers are still a little green
and
fresh,
and
they're conservative. So you kind of want to hit late.
So there's
in
a sweet
the early
spot.
Bird. There
so
is.
Maybe like two or 3 days at the end of the early bird.
She
you know,
said the day before.
The day before. Okay. Well, with electronic applications, that's a little bit more feasible now. We're not guessing when we ship them off.
It says 11:58 p.m.
So I sent it on time. Yes. I'm only to be charged $25.
Yep.
Okay. Excellent. Okay, so we've applied, we've promoted while there.
Yes.
Now, let's say, worst case scenario, you do like 3 or 4 really good film festivals, your film is out there, it's good, but you don't get picked up for distribution or anything. You've met good people, you've got good contacts. Is it follow-up thank you letters? Is it someone the other day recommended, you know,
great
if you
question.
Go to a festival, have a script ready to present for the next thing?
Oh,
what's the best approach?
Yes. Okay. All right. Hold on. I have to shift in my chair. I'm preparing.
Okay.
All right. Oh, I think I went down. I don't know what's happening here. Yes. Okay. So, obviously, you want to get a job. So back when I was saying earlier that you really just want to have people respond to your work, the other aspect of this, the other objective, I believe, is to network.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will somehow walk out with a job.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be as director. It may be as something else, maybe doing something else. But yes, if you're a director, then you need to have your next project going. So it's really important to have another project. And the further along it is, the better. Matt Arnold, who used to teach at NYFA, he had a very successful short film and has talked very openly about how he squandered the opportunity because he just didn't have another project. And he's a really talented writer. He said it took him a long time to sort of resuscitate the energy around his big festival run.
Mm.
And he's been very successful at this point. He sold the show Siberia that ended up at NBC and Emerald City, also at NBC. So, but he's like, you've got to be ready. I don't think that should stop anyone from applying to festivals. I think that you just want to be aware that you need to have your next ideas going.
Copy. Okay. All right. So we've gotten you guys through your first film festival, essentially. Like, you want to go as a student, preferably, just to experience the culture of a film festival. Then you need to make your film. While you're making that film, you need to make sure you're gathering all the materials for a good press kit and that you've set aside some money in order to be able to apply to the festivals that you experienced that you liked when you were a student. You want to apply early bird, but right toward the end of that, so your film doesn't get too, you know, lost in the wash. Then you also want to make sure that you're promoting the film in ways that'll help you stick out and be memorable. And then finally, network, have a good attitude, have your next film ready. Yep. You guys are ready to go to your first film
festival. You're ready to go. Oh, and I just want to add on the budget thing that if you want to travel to festivals, you'd need to have some budget there. Mm-hmm. Just remember, guys, that there are over 75 great festivals around the Southern California area. So you could just apply here and just do like day trips. It would be great. It would be awesome.
Again, don't be afraid of those smaller film festivals.
I agree.
People go, as we talked about earlier, it's a small community. Yeah. So the judge there might be on the board somewhere else. Yep. At the very least, we'll probably continue to rise and circulate at other festivals.
Absolutely.
So just because it's small doesn't mean it's any less of an award or praise for your film. And you'll be able to talk to people who will hopefully be interested and invested in your next project, mm-hmm. which, in as you guys know, it's always about what you're doing next.
What are you doing next?
Cricket, thank you so much for joining us and walking us through festival process.
You.
I learned so much today. This was really exciting.
And it was so fun to be here.
Thank you. When you're ready to show your doc off, we want to have you come back. Seriously, because that's so fascinating. You're a screenwriter. You were a journalist. Now you work with festivals, and now you're doing docs. Like, it's... You do so much, and it's all kind of
so
integrated
crazy.
And ingrained. It's exciting. Thank you again for being
it.
Here.
Thank you. This was so much fun, and good luck, everybody.
Definitely. We'll see you guys next week. We're not sure who our guest is going to be yet, but I promise you it's going to be someone fun. So join us next week right here on Popcorn Talk for the NYFA Hour. Thanks, guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only, and not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.